Hello and welcome to another episode of Board Gamer. This week we're going to be talking all about... Oh no, we're not doing that.
Everything. Yeah.
I can't believe we've actually made it to episode 11 now. I think it is.
It's going quick.
Yeah, I know. Unbelievable. If we're a bit sweaty, it's probably because we've just had a curry. So ignore that.
Nice.
Bit spicy.
Matt Powder. We should have been powdered up before we went on.
Yeah, so when this is coming out, we'll probably be at UKG.
We will.
Really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Definitely. It's the highlight of my year.
Yeah, me too. So we're going to be sticking to the same format that we had last week. Let us know what you thought about the new format. If you think there's any improvements that we could make or any suggestions, we're welcome to opinions. But yeah, let's get into it. Starting off with Game of the Week. So this week, my Game of the Week is Books of Time. If you haven't picked this one up, it's definitely worth a go. It's a really unique experience, actually, because you've got these little books inside that you open up and you have to choose certain ones to fit into your tableau. And you're competing with other players with these books. And at the end of it, you score according to how many pages have been written, which books you've written in. It's a really unique concept, actually. I first seen this one from Before We Play. They had a playthrough and review. I watched that and I thought, you know what? This is definitely going to be worth a go. I'd never seen quite the concept like it before. So I took a risk on it. And it's really good. It's designed by Philippe Glowax. Glowatch. Yeah. And it's published by Board and Dice, so yeah, give this one a go. Have you played this one before?
I haven't. No, I don't know much about it.
Nice. Well, I'll have to give it a go.
Soon. Is it a strategic game?
Yeah, it's strategic. I'd say it's in that medium category.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Nothing too complex. It's really cool. It comes with these like little binders that you have for the books.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I thought it was a really unique design.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah, it's what we need. Yeah, oh, it's cool.
Different ideas.
The artwork looks cool as well.
Yeah, it's a really nice design. I think it says it's 1-4. I haven't played it solo, so we'll see how that goes. But definitely give this one a go. Cool, so moving on to our community question of the week. This one, it's the best game that we played in May. So let us know what your favourite game is that you've played in May, whether that's something new or something of old, or something you played with the family and friends. Just let us know. Tim, what's your...
There was a game that we played... But I'm not going to say it because I know you're going to say it. So I'm going to go for something different. I actually really enjoyed a co-op game this month that a mate bought called Summit. I've played it probably about three times now. You're climbing a mountain and you can play it co-op or competitive. We've just done it co-op. And if anybody knows me, I love co-op games in legendary mode only. So I have to play the hardest. The first time we played it, though, we played with another guy and he was like, no, I'm not playing in legendary. So we just played it normal. Okay. We won. Great. And then the second game, he left. So he said, my mate said, do you want to play again? We'll do it in legendary. Legendary. And we lost badly.
How badly?
We didn't really make it. I don't even know if we made summited. So the idea is you've got to summit and then you've got to try and get back down. One of you has to get to the bottom of the mountain.
Yeah.
The rest of you, if you can get, you score on depending on how many players can get to the bottom, to base camp.
Yeah.
But you only win if one of you gets there. So if one gets there and the rest of you die, you just count the points up.
Yeah.
But if you've got some other surviving players, you get more points. So you see what score you get as a team at the end. Yeah, I don't know if we summited. The third time we played, there was three of us, and we decided to do it legendary again because it's like there's no option. And it was hilarious, really, really good, good fun. We summited. We got about one of the guys got about just over halfway down,
yeah.
And the rest of us were about halfway to like a quarter of the way back down. And it was like inevitable. We were all gonna die. It was just getting like really tight at the end.
Yeah.
And my mate just pulled this item that said wingsuit. And he said he had to roll a certain dice roll and he could fly to the base camp. So it all kind of ended up being on this one move if he rolled it. Because he was literally going to die that round.
Yeah.
Or sort of thing. Or the next like round after that. So he was like, look, I'm never going to make it all the way to the bottom. I'm just going to wingsuit it down. And we were all going, come on, let's do this. Like, this is a legendary victory if you do it. And he rolled it. Oh, made nice. It to base camp. So we won legendary. And then me and my mate Ben died on the mountain. But a team victory.
That's it.
So a really good game. Really good fun. I've not played the competitive, but in the competitive side, you can like mess around with other players and stuff, but you get like karma points and that, which mm-hmm. can affect the game and that. So I've not played it, but that's the next one to try. But Summit, really good game.
Sounds really cool. Hey, do you know what's the player count with that one?
I think it's four.
Four.
Yeah, I think there are lots of player boards, so each player has like a bit of an asymmetric type power.
That's cool.
So there's lots to play with, but I'm not sure how many you can play in one go. I don't know if you can play all of them, but I'm not sure if it's just four or something.
How does the competitive work then? Are you just fighting each
You're just racing up the mountain and back down, I think. But you can kind of do things to affect other players.
Oh, so there is that player interaction there as well. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's quite cool, yeah. So
In terms of other cooperative games, how do you think it compares?
I would say it's quite your standard co-op game in terms of you do your actions, and then bad stuff happens. So mm-hmm. it's like every typical cult game you'll probably play. It actually all comes down to a look at the dice. Because you roll two dice. One's a weather die to see if it's sunny, if it's snowed, or if it's like, I think it's like a blizzard.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a snow, you have to use up one of your food, I think it is.
Okay.
But if you have a blizzard, it's really bad. You move up this blizzard track and you lose like quite a bit of food and oxygen.
Yeah.
The one really cool thing I've got to say is the player boards themselves. You have like food, oxygen, weight, speed, and health.
Mm-hmm.
And this cube moves up and down the track. But the more food you have, the more weight you have, which means the less movement you can do.
Okay.
So your weight and your movement speed and your food, it all changes throughout the game as you go lighter. But at any point, you can like restock. You have a Sherpa that's with you, and he holds all your like extra food and oxygen. So you can skip a go to get more out. But obviously, mm-hmm. that's going to affect your speed and movement again, and your weight again. So there's all this like you've got to take all that into kind of consideration how you're going to do it. So sometimes we were like, look, I'm going to keep my food and oxygen low because I'm just going to try and rush to the top of the mountain so I've got more movements. So you've got like all these little things to do. And it's got this tile placement sort of thing where it's like the ropes that you climb up.
Yeah.
Some are like normal ropes and then you get like thin air ones where you get to a thin air part of the mountain. And if you go in there, you have to lose an oxygen. There's another one which is like icy ropes and they've got more movement in them, so it takes slower to get through those sort of parts of the track. So there's so many factors to the game. It was really like cleverly done. The theme was really good. Really good fun between us all. And I think having that dice roll, not just always turning a card and going, oh, something bad's happened.
Yeah.
Having that dice that can, you know, you can have a really just lucky game and get there, or it could just all go wrong miserably at the start, and I think one of the second game we played, we rolled the dice so badly that we had to turn these event cards, and what had happened, I think we both lost our Sherpa at the start, so we didn't have any reserves. Oh, we're like, brilliant, like what a great start to the game. So it's really fun.
Oh, nice. It sounds really good.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, you kind of alluded to what my game is going to be. I was trying to think of another one, but in all honesty, I'm lying to myself if I say it wasn't. My favourite game of the month has definitely been Fromage. If you get the chance to play it on BGA, definitely give it a go, because it's such an amazing, unique... it's a lazy Susan in the middle of the board, and you're putting cheeses on. You've got the soft...
Hard and blue.
That's it, yeah. But you've also got your own little player board that you can kind of build structures, milk cows, add fruits and jam. It's such a cool experience. We actually kind of joked about Fromage a little bit on an episode of games we was looking forward to in the year. And I've got to say, it might be my favourite game I played this year.
I would agree, yeah.
I just really enjoy it. Whether it will wear a little thin the more I play, because me and you were just playing back-to-back. And I'd also like to see it at higher player counts. So I hold my opinion till I've done both of them. And also, I'm hoping that I'll be able to pick up a copy at UKGE to
give it a
physical experience. Everything so far with Fromage I've absolutely loved, and it's definitely worth a go on Board Game Arena.
I agree. I think Board Game Arena as well does the whole upkeep thing, so just kind of... I think it would be nice to play a physical copy, but I think it was nice to kind of, when you first playing it, just to get around like how you play it and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a really good way of actually just teaching the game. Definitely. If you want to actually learn about the game before you buy it, because there's so many different strategies, and I think we kind of, not proved, but everyone that we tried has definitely been viable.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Give Fromage a go.
I liked it when we first played it, because I think the first game we were like a bit unsure what we were doing. Typical first game.
Yeah.
And then the second game, we're like, right, got it now. Let's play another game. So we played the second, and we're like, should we do one more? Now we know. Because it went quite quick, didn't it, I think?
Yeah, I think it would be more like an hour if you was going to actually play it physical.
But then I think we ended up playing a fourth game, didn't we? Like, it got late, and we were just like, should we just do one more? And then we're like, yeah, go on. Then we just enjoyed it that much. And I think we went back on it, like, was it 2 days later or a day
after? I know. It was like, should we play something different? It was like, nah, let's just play Fromage again.
Yeah, I always come back to this idea of like trying to find games that are quite unique and different. And I think that Lazy Susan and how it works with getting your sort of, because you put your carrots on the board, depending on what age of cheese you do, you have to wait until you get your cheese, like your cheese makers back, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that was such a cool concept, because you're like, oh, I really need that. But then you didn't want to wait 3 turns for your cheese to come back. I think that was such a cool move. I thought it was a cool style of game, different, really strategic, but yeah, really cool.
Nice. I like it. So yeah, let us know what your games best played in May are. And we look forward to hearing your responses as well. Okay, moving on to tabletop news. So this week in tabletop news, we found a really interesting article about Ross Brudzink. He's the creator of the game Vicious Gardens. And what is really unique, and you know what? This kind of comes back to an episode that I think it was 2 episodes ago with Jake and myself, where we was talking about mechanics versus the actual artwork of a game. And Ross was talking about on this article, which we'll link below in the description, that how important the artwork is into selling a game. And he was going through the experiences of why it's like being a Kickstarter, the feedback that you get back from people when you go to play testing, but also the importance of when it comes to selling a game, how much the artwork needs to compel people just to get that initial reaction.
Yeah, I agree.
I was interested in what your thoughts are, especially being a designer. I
totally agree. I think I do it as a professional job, and I think artwork is one of the clear things that differentiate brands and that sort of thing. So why wouldn't it for board games as well, especially? And I think he's right. I think the issue we have in board games is a lot of people really heavily going with the design, and then the gameplay and the mechanics aren't always amazing.
Yeah.
And I think what then happens is we have this like sort of general stigma around the idea that people hide behind the design. But actually, it is the design that sold it in the first place. So that's what this guy was saying. And I think it was really impressive what he's saying, because was it something like his goal was 12,000 and he's on 300,000?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So he's like massively over his goal. He's got loads of backing. And the artwork's incredible. It looks really cool and different. And I think that's probably is part of what makes it so unique and why he stood out and why he's done so well with it. I know he's used that company Launch Boom,
yeah.
They're become quite big in the whole Kickstarter board game community, so that helps. But I think equally their whole model is going through like ads. And again, the artwork is only going to sell the ad, isn't it? So yeah, I think it's a really interesting article. One of my favorite bits is, I think in the article he says about is, it normally takes 2 years to make a game, and he thought he could do it in a year, and he was like, how wrong I was. And even then he was struggling. But the nice thing is, I think with Ross, is he's obviously designed a game that's good, but he's also play tested it enough with his friends to find a model that works mechanically as well. So
yeah, that's a good point. The game looks really interesting. I noticed in the article as well, he said that take the feedback that you get with a little bit of a pinch of salt, like you truly know the game.
Yeah.
Don't get wrong, people's opinions is important. Well,
matter, yeah.
But you shouldn't just swing your opinion to whatever
exactly.
A person says.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought it was a really interesting article. And yeah, it just lent well with what we were talking about in the previous episode as well, with that balance really that needs to be found within a game. And I think it shows that artwork can be dismissed a little bit, and how important it is, especially in the sales factor as well.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like we talk about UKGE, and you go to somewhere like UKGE and you find games, especially if you go to like the Bring and Buy, the second-hand bit, because you look at games, you go, oh, I'm not going to buy that just because of the way it looks.
Yeah.
But it could actually be a really good game. I think it's sad because there are some really good games out there that have got really bad artwork. But there you go. And I think anybody who's thinking about designing a game or kickstarting a game or producing a game, it just shows that artwork shouldn't be dismissed, I think.
No, I think that's a really valid point. And it kind of, the fact that the designer, Beth Sober, she's used so often, especially I think Stonemaier have used her quite a bit. She's on Cascadia as well. And whenever I see their games, they immediately strike to me.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Games like Parks as well. They just look great, and it draws you in immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, it does help that the mechanics work really well with those games as well, but it definitely draws you in.
Definitely. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, cool. So that was Tabletop News. The link in the description will be below. Check that out.
So I looked at a cafe up in Manchester called Good Time Games. I really like, because we look at these cafes quite often and they're nice and spacious, loads of room and all this, and this is this really small independent little tiny one, which I thought was really cool. From what I can see, it's just like a few tables on the side and they've got a Kallax with a few games in, which is really cool. So I just thought it was a bit different and I thought I would shout out to them. They are rated 4.9 on Google.
Very good. Yeah.
Fully vegan veggie menu options for all those plant-based dieters out there. So that's quite good.
Nice.
And then the other one was that I think they just have a £3 an hour, but they cap it at £8. So not too badly priced at all. Really fair and that sort of thing. So I just thought, because obviously you've got Fanboy 3 up there, which is like huge and everyone knows. I speak to people all the time and they all know about Fanboy 3, even though they're not from Manchester.
Oh, wow.
So you kind of like think, oh, how do they do? But I think actually there's something nice in having a smaller board game shop or a board game cafe, shall I say. And I just thought it was really nice. It's really, really nicely designed, just really minimalist sort of like feel to it. So yeah, I thought I'd give them a shout out.
Nice. That sounds really cool. I quite like the independent feel. Like if there's a, on the other end, like if there's a coffee shop, like a nice independent one, I'll always pick it over a chain. And I know, like, to be honest, most of the board game cafes we cover are independent.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, that like unique, small, wholesome, cozy feel.
Yeah, definitely. And I think some board game cafes are chaining out now. Like Chance Encounters have got like 3 locations now.
I know. Yeah.
Thirsty Meeples down in, I think it's Bath. They've got one in Oxford as well. So you're starting to see a little bit of this chained board game cafe thing going on, which is fine. I really like it. I'm glad that it is working. They found a model that works. But yeah, I've got to support the small guys as well. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And also our editor, EJ, is in Manchester. So
yeah,
we'll be shouting him to get down there.
Go on, Jay.
Yeah,
going down there. To be fair, I'm actually in Manchester next month filming. So I might text Jay and we'll go down
there.
Cheeky
little visit.
Cheeky little visit down to the old, Good Time Games.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now on to the next part of the show where we're going to be talking about our board game showcase. So this one is going to be small games but big strategy. So we've picked a light, medium and heavy game. Because there's just us two, we're going to be picking a medium game each. So you're getting double in that category. A little treat. So I thought, you know what, I'll start off with the light game this week. So my light game for the small box, big strategy is Arboretum.
Oh, nice.
You know what, okay. I should just get it because it's just here. So my light game of the small box, big strategy is Arboretum. It's made by Dan Kassar, published by Renegade Games. And it's a really unique game where you can probably teach the rules in, I'd say, about 30 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really simple. You just pick up a card, discard a card, and you have to play a card into your Arboretum. They're your three actions that you've got. Where it is, I'd say, a little bit more complex is the scoring. So the scoring in Arboretum, you have, it's quite unique where you've got the, however long your Arboretum is, I won't bog you down too much with the details because there's certain different elements with it. But you can pretty much go one by one for each one. You get double if it's past 4 in your Arboretum of a certain tree type. And there's a unique rule as well. And I'll get to this unique rule because this is what makes the game. Where if the person, say there's 4 of us playing, if there was another person where at the end of the game holds more of the trees of that type than the other person, they don't score them trees.
Okay.
So your end game cards really do matter.
Okay.
So you obviously you want to put the cards out, but at the same time you're thinking, you know what, I've got to keep some of these behind, so
you can,
You can. I've seen people that think I've made the best Arboretum ever, and someone else is holding them, and they only end up with like 1 point or something ridiculous. Yeah, I've seen it described online as a knife fight in a phone booth. It can be brutal.
Oh, nice.
And I quite like that. There's so much player interaction.
Yeah,
all it is a card game. You take a few cards out dependent on the player count, but it's really unique in that sense where it's got this like, you always kind of a bit suspect. If someone picks up, I don't know, a willow, and you're thinking, whatever, I haven't seen them pick up a willow before. Are they just plotting against this person? It's really interesting. And I've had mixed opinions of it. Some people don't like the nastiness of it.
Well, yeah, it's
Yeah. If you're very much a gamer that likes that more solitaire experience, it might not be for you, but I love Arboretum. It works well with two. I think probably a little bit better at four because you've got more people. If it's just a turvy, you kind of know who you're picking on. Yeah. Where when there's more, you can kind of spread the load a little bit more.
I like that. Do you know what? I love games where I get picked on because the victory is more sweeter.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, especially if you feel like someone's... I played a game of Catan once and they house ruled that you can't use the robber.
They can't use robber?
Yeah, they house ruled because they just thought it was too mean.
Ah.
So as soon as I went, I was like, no, I'm not having that. And I just started robbing everyone. So because I ignored the house rule, they started like all teaming up against me. And I went, fine, I'll take you all on. And I ended up winning, which was such a sweet victory because I was just getting picked on the whole game by the robber. Everyone who was like playing picked on me for... I was like, right, I'm taking this.
I actually quite like a little bit of nastiness.
Yeah, it's good.
Not nastiness, maybe that's the wrong word, but... Yeah, you know that little bit of take that.
Yeah, I like it a little bit. I think if a game has based it around that, like you say this has, I think it's like that old like Munchkin type thing. I think that's got that very take that sort of mentality. The only thing is I find with Munchkin is everyone helps each other until you get to the last level and then everyone fights each other.
Yeah.
As I like, with something like this, I can see that it's probably like throughout the game you really...
Yeah, yeah. And... There is this. I said I wasn't going to bog you down with rules, but there's this other thing where if you've got, it's been a few months since I played this. I think it's the 10. Yes, sorry. If you've got the 10, and someone else, the 10 in your arboretum, and someone else has got the 1, then it completely negates the 10.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll double check that I've got that right before this goes out. But yeah, it's another element to the game in terms of scoring. And I know I put this in the light one because it's only three actions. Yeah. I mean, anyone can pretty much play it. But yeah, I think there's not a lot of unique elements in terms of the scoring and the potentials to... inflict some harm on each other.
Nice. Oh, I think it's quite a good shout for a small box, big strategy game.
Yeah.
Especially definitely. In that light category.
So, yeah, Arboretum. Another very pretty game as well. So, give this one a go. It's my light game for small box, big strategy. Okay, now over to our medium, small box, big strategy. On to you, Tim.
Yeah. I was trying to think about this because I was trying to think if the games that I chose were more in the lighter sense than a heavier game. But I will go with one particular game. I might have referenced this in the past, but it's a game that I've got called Furnace.
Yeah.
It's slightly bigger than a small box. So it's like, it's not quite a big box though. It's still quite... I don't know, a good book size.
Yeah.
There's not a lot in it, though. Do you know what I mean? So it kind of could fit into a small box quite easily. But it's an economic building sort of game, engine building as well. So you have buildings out in the middle. You auction between you all to try and win a building. And then you put it in your row of buildings. But there's a rule where you can't... I think in the basic game, they say you can move it around. But in the like advanced rules, once you put a building in a space, it's locked in that row, like that column of that sort of row. And then the idea is once everyone's bought all their cards and whatnot, you run your engine. So like you kind of want to build... Or you want factories at the start that manufacture like coal, and then you want factories that turn coal into iron or oil or something like over time. You can trade them in. And then at the end, you want to try and sell it out for money because the end of the game, it's the person with the most money wins. Very kind of strategic, very clever the way it works. So you like, then by the time you get to round four, you're like kind of going, right, I've got coal there and I've got iron there to do that, and I've got something to, I can turn that to oil, and then I could upgrade that car, that factory that allows me to do this. And then by the end of it, you have this, if you get it right, you just literally, you're churning all this material out into money.
Oh, that sounds cool.
And it's really, really cool. The other really funny part of it is when you auction, you have these little discs from 1 to 4, four mm-hmm. being the most powerful. So if you put a 4, if I put a 4 and you put a 3, yeah, I'd win that card. However, at the top of each factory, there's a compensation if you don't win it.
Okay.
It might be just materials. So it could be coal, could be iron, it could be oil, or you might be a trade. So it's like you can just use the factory for a quick trade as a compensation.
Yeah.
Now, if you put a 3 on it, you can do that 3 times. So mm-hmm. it's like a really good way of like, so sometimes you don't want the card itself, you just want the compensation. So yeah, you're like, you're waiting for someone to put a disc on it to see if you can get a compensation out of it. Because mm-hmm. you can't put the same number as someone else. So if someone puts a 4, you can't put your 4 on there. But it's funny, sometimes you're like, I really need the compensation, so I'm just going to put a 1 on that card or a 2 on that to just do it. Yeah. And then everyone knows that you want the compensation, so nobody bids for it. And then you end up winning it and you don't get the compensation. You're like, no, I've got to put this factory somewhere and it doesn't fit in with my plans. And very, very clever. I've actually just... someone bought me the expansion. I've not played it yet, but it adds like universities and it adds a 5th player into it, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
So I'm looking forward to giving that a go. But it's quite straightforward to get into it. But it's quite... Well, I think everyone who plays it the first time, it's quite difficult to understand how you're going to do your strategy. And okay, I think what's funny is whenever I see people play it first, by the end of the game, my success is not winning the game. I don't care if I win or not. But yeah, my success is, have I made the most efficient factory where I've got no resources left, but I've got a nice pile of money? Like, yeah, I've really efficiently, like... But you notice all the beginners, they've just been so mad at getting all the things. They end up with loads of coal, loads of iron, loads of oil, and you're like, nah, you needed to sell that. Like, you need factories to sell it. So, great game.
Oh, nice. I'm going to definitely have to check that one out. Yeah. That sounds really interesting. It kind of reminds, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the way that you kind of like run the factories at the end, it's a little bit like Far Away.
It's not
the backwards.
Yeah, so Far Away. Yeah, you're kind of doing that because you're checking if you've got the right resources to get points in that.
Yeah.
So similar, yeah.
But instead you'd...
Yeah.
Making products.
Yeah. And I think it's a good analogy. I should have put Far Away in.
You know, Far Away I thought about, yeah. Is that a light game though?
I think it's just in between light and medium.
Yeah. Maybe. Kind of like Arboretum though, really. Yeah. So. Yeah, I know. Well,
there's
great game.
There's a juicy bonus.
Juicy
everyone.
Bonus. Far Away.
Similar to that in terms of that sort of like trying to get the minerals to get the points, but in furnaces about getting the money.
Yeah.
But you've got more, I don't know, you've got, yeah, I guess it is the same. It's like that fixed, you've put them in their slots and you've got to try and make it most efficient way of doing it. So it's a good analogy, I think.
Yeah, can you plan ahead or is it kind of like...
So the first round you just have, depending on the player count, yeah, I think it is, you have so many factories out, you all auction to try and win them or get the compensation. You build your first set and then you run it. And then you go to round 2, more factories come out. So I guess Far Away is like a bit backwards to that, isn't it?
Yeah,
so
it is, yeah.
You put your cards out and then you pick something that might fit in. But you don't have cards in hand, though. You just literally look into which one you want to buy and that sort of thing. Then you collect them in. But yeah, it's good.
Nice. I like it. I will definitely be checking that one out. So my medium, small box, big strategy game is Seven Wonders Duel. It's produced by, designed by Anton Bowser and Bruno Cathala and published by Repos Games. This game is probably my first foray into board gaming, I think.
Nice.
Yeah. I was going to pick a few other games, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to stick it with the OG. I just love how there's the mechanic where you can kind of starve the other person of resources. And just if you go resource heavy, then they're like, oh, wait, now I need brick to produce that wonder. and guess what? You got to pay me 6 gold to get it. I think it's really unique. And also, but it's not completely that in the same way. If you do go down that strategy, you're not going to be getting the resources out to build the wonders and produce gold efficiently. Not produce gold, sorry. Produce the other like resources that you need to build whatever else to get victory points. If you do go down that route, or whether you go down the science route. I think it's a great game. I think it adds on to Seven Wonders really well. So if someone has played Seven Wonders, they enjoyed that. You can introduce this game to them. They'll pick up on all the iconography pretty much straight away. And yeah, I think it's a nice little trip into that small box, big strategy. People think that this is a little bit of a lighter version of Seven Wonders. Think, oh, it's just a dual version. It doesn't offer that much different. But I think there's a lot of strategy to be had in this game. You can go down so many different routes.
I'd say it's about the same or even probably more strategic than...
I think it's more than Seven Wonders, in all honesty. We've been kind of surprised because we've been playing it online, Seven Wonders, that is. And how you can just get a game out in like 6-7 minutes. Maybe, it's just insane. There was a Reddit post about like what are the games that you prefer on BGA. And I'm not saying that Seven Wonders or Seven Wonders Jewel is better on BGA, but if you want to get a game out as quickly as possible... you just got a bit of freeze time. I definitely recommend that on there as well. I've played so many games of it. And yeah, I just love this game. I would definitely say it's my most played game of all time. And I'll give it a shout out whenever I can. So yeah, that's my medium game for a small box, big strategy. So finally, as part of our board game showcase, we're over to Tim with the heavy... small box, big strategy.
Heavy, small box, big strategy. That's quite a mouthful, wasn't it?
That's a mouthful.
There was one game that did it for me. I might have mentioned it before, but I have to bring it out just because it was so good. It's one of the games of the year for me. Was it this year we played it? It was, wasn't it?
I don't know what you're on about yet. So.
Oh, yeah. It is the White Castle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I think that was a game that we played a couple of times back to back over a few nights or something, just to keep playing it.
It's such a good game. You know what? Last year, I gave Thunder Road Vendetta my game of the year, and I don't know whether this will just pick it now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I still love Thunder Road.
I think they're two different games, though, aren't they? One's really highly strategic and really thinky, and the other one's... just a laugh and just great fun, isn't it? So the main thing I love about it is I've got the physical copy and the production's lovely. It's the little bridges and everything, just such a lovely like add to the game. The dice thing is just brilliant in it. You play three rounds, three turns around, so you only play three dice. And it depends on which side of the bridge you go, isn't it? So one side's like your higher pip dice.
Yeah.
That allows you to do more actions, essentially, across the board. Because if you don't have enough pips, you have to pay to add to that. And then the left side of the bridge is like the lower pips. So you're most likely going to have to pay. But you get what we call the lantern action, which gives you extra resources bonus. So sometimes you kind of want to play those to get the extras. But what I really like, and this will go, I know some people don't like this. Some people love this. I'm one of those that loves it, is that you finish the game and you just wish you had that one last turn because you knew something big was going to come up. But I like that cliffhanger of like what could have possibly happened if I had one more turn sort of thing. I like that. Makes me want to play it again because it's like, can I get that turn out that's just going to like... I think when we've played it, there's been games that we've just had, average games, and there's games where we've just done a mad combo and we've just got massive dopamine rush of just this does this, that allows me to do this, that allows me to move this guy up. And then you're just like, wow, that was a big move for one action sort of thing. And I just like this idea that you've got 9 turns to get it right and try and get a good score, and you've got to try and really think about your moves. But I guess you could AP really badly, but I didn't feel like it was a massive AP, because it's not like load you can do. You've just got to think within this, what's the best move I can do?
Yeah, also the player interaction isn't that high. So while the other person is doing their go, you can kind of think in the background as like, oh, you know what, maybe I can do this next go and move exactly into that. And yeah, I just love that you get them goes where it's just a chain effect of one thing after another. It's just, oh, it's such a good feeling. I love that game.
Yeah. Lovely theme, so many different options of how to go about it as well. Because you've got the gardeners, the courtiers, and the warriors, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there's just so many different... And also, each game plays differently because it depends on what sort of tokens go out and cards go out in different areas. So one game might really lend itself well to the warriors and another game to the farmers or, you know, that sort of thing. So you just have this really great approach to the game. I really enjoyed it.
Really cool. Great theme. Great design.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant game. What's the max player count on there?
4, I think.
4, yeah. And you know what? Yeah. When you first got it out, because I'd only played before you showed me the physical, I'd only played it on TTS. And when you showed me the actual game, I just couldn't believe the size of it. Yeah, because we'd only played it on TTS, and TTS will scale it to whatever the table is. And I seen it. I was like, no way. That can't be the whole game.
Yeah, it's quite small, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just insane. And I love the, as you said, the...
Bridges.
The bridges, yeah. So cool.
So cool. So cool. They, is it Devir? Who publish it?
Yeah.
They create another game. Apparently, it's quite a small... I think they're about small box, heavy strategy. They've got another one called Red Cathedral.
Yes, I've heard of this.
Yeah, I've not played it, but I would like to give that a go next.
Yeah, I'd like to give that one a go for sure.
Yeah.
It's not the heaviest game. Don't get me wrong. I think it is a heavy game.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's like super heavy though. Like, so you don't get put off if like the heaviest thing you've played is like Catan or something, because this wouldn't be too overbearing, I think.
No, I don't think it's... And like I say, it's a small box. There's not like, you know, we talk about Gaia Project or something like that.
Yeah.
There's loads and there's asymmetric characters and there's lots of parts to it. It's quite small within its little thing. And the actions are quite small. You just take a dice and you put it in an area and you get either resources or you get to put a person out.
Yeah.
It's quite straightforward. The heaviness comes in that strategy of trying to combo those moves get the best move out. And like you say, I think we've tried a few different, like there's a heron track at the top. We've tried that.
Yeah.
And then we've tried getting the people out. And we've tried, I think the one we found was like, I think it's warriors and courtiers. They multiply, don't they? So trying to get a mixture of those two and then they multiply the score.
Yeah, that's always a good... That is the big points.
But then the farmers could equally get...
Yeah, that's true. So, you know what? It's interesting because, you know what? I've just thought about this. The multipliers, how that works, is very similar to the... Sorry for the people listening to this. It's very specific. But it's similar to the fruit and the berries
in fromage.
In fromage, yeah. And we, I specifically just went that route and that was viable as well. It's quite similar in that it doesn't just like one strategy is the go-to.
And equally, like fromage and those sort of games, a balanced game could just... I think when we've played a really balanced game, the scores have been quite close and that sort of thing. And I think it's the same with this.
Yeah, like, I think that's the beauty in the playtesting that's gone into it. It's really, really cool. Yeah, the White Crystal, that's a great shout. Yeah, nice one. Okay, on to Back the Board, Kickstarter Project of the Week. Tim, do you want to go through that with us?
Yeah. I watched a video from Before You Play, And they did Rebirth, which is going to be the new Reiner Knizia game.
Oh, nice.
Watched a video, loved it. Being from the UK, it's all about Scotland. So I thought that was pretty cool. It's a tile placement game. The idea is that I think it's to do with like everywhere's been demolished or whatever, and it's about the rebirth of clans trying to rebuild Scotland and the castles and that sort of thing. And your the tiles that you lay will help rebuild and get resources that will help you do things. So I watched it. The artwork is beautiful. Really, really colourful. It looks like Reiner Knizia is bringing or has brought out a game this year called Cascadero, which is another tile sort of laying game. So it seems to be his thing at the moment. But I really like the look of this. I'm definitely going to back it on Kickstarter myself. Cool. I'm going to... Yeah, I think it looks really, really cool. And just... Really cool theme, really nice artwork, really nice little gameplay. It doesn't look too heavy.
Yeah.
And one of the things I thought about the Kickstarter, I think the first pledge is like $45 or £45. So it's not like super expensive for a Kickstarter. So yeah, I would take a look at it. I would say go and watch the Before You Play video because they do a really good video on it and show you the different... The like the sort of teach and the playthrough. So.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I like when they do that.
Yeah, it looks really, really good.
Nice. You can't beat, well, debatable, but Reiner Knizia is like, he's one of the goats, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. We want to do a thing on it, don't we?
Yeah.
I think that
might be coming up soon, a little sneak preview of like our favourites of the Reiner Knizia. And other designers as well to come. So
we've just got to play through a few more, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, he's got so many.
Yeah,
We've definitely got our work cut out in terms of Reiner Knizia games. But I've played a fair amount, and every one of his games I've pretty much loved so far.
Yeah.
There's been a few misses here and there. I'll save that for the episode. But the in terms of this one, I think the artwork looks great. I haven't looked into too much of like the mechanics and stuff, so I'll definitely check out that Before You Play video. But no, really good show, and that is Rebirth by Reiner Knizia. Thank you for watching this week's episode of Board Gamer. We've made it past the 10th episode, so I'm kind of in shock about that myself. So if you've got any comments or anything that you'd recommend in terms of small box, big strategy games, I know there's tons we've missed out there. We've only picked four, a little bonus one there. But yeah, if you have any suggestions, let us know. And yeah, we'll look forward to seeing the next one. If you see us at UKGE, give us a shout out and we're more than welcome to come over and have a chat. We're always interested to hear your opinions and feedback. It's been great, the support that we've been getting. So carry on, and we look forward to seeing you on the next one. See you all.